Today's show is brought to you in part by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals.
For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/feastoffun.
For gay, lesbian, bi, and trans folks, telling our stories can be vital to our personal growth. The internet creates a safe place for people to discover the sexier side of themselves by reflecting on their experience with others.
Today, we continue our series of interviews with well-known bloggers who know how to make it happen. We have kinky writer, queer butch top, Sinclair Sexsmith of the Sugar Butch Chronicles.
Listen as we chat with Sinclair about her journey as a writer of erotica, coming out in your blog, and New York City's lesbian sex mafia.
How do you avoid getting your site blocked because of its sexy content?
The controversy over hot top butches.
Dealing with haters on your blog.
And why losing guilt over sex may be the most important thing you can do. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Hello, this is Sinclair.
Hi, this is Fausto Fernos.
And Mark Fillion from the Feast of Fun podcast. How are you doing today?
Fantastic. How are you?
Doing great, thank you.
Now, typically, we always check our sound levels by asking our guests what they had for breakfast. What did you have for breakfast today?
I had pear Gruyere pie that my girlfriend made.
You had pear hair pie? What?
No, not hair. Pear hair pie.
That sounds delicious.
She did make it because Sugar Butch Chronicles, my website, won a Lezzy Award last week. So she tweeted, "What's in a Lezzy pie, everybody?" And people said all sorts of crazy shit. And actually, one of the things they said was hair. Hair was in a Lezzy pie.
It's a Gruyere is the closest to hair, so she made you pear and Gruyere.
That was intentionally a pun.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, it was. It was a big. It's delicious. It's like pear. It's actually marinated in port on the inside, and then the crust has Gruyere in it.
Sinclair, and you didn't invite us over for brunch?
Haha.
She's in New York.
More for me.
Oh my God, that sounds absolutely delicious. It's like, well, if you ever need to have an partner exchange program.
Hey, I'll make you some pairing. You wouldn't even like it. Fausto doesn't like cheese like that.
But I love goat cheese. Like
yeah, but
a nice tart.
Stinky, though.
It is.
Well, a little stinky.
Oh, but it's not. You can barely taste it. It just tastes cheesy because it's in the crust.
It's in the crust.
Yeah, it's not in the pie itself. It's just baked into the crust. So
wonderful.
It's just a little tang. Oh, it's so good.
Well, congratulations on your Lezzy Award.
Thank you. It was the best sex short story erotica blog, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And so I, of course, had to go write some sex stuff because I've been writing about gender a lot lately.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't been writing so much on the sex.
Well, as in like, sort of people talking about and playing with and redefining their gender, isn't that a turn on to some?
I think so. It is for me, absolutely. Sometimes I call that foreplay.
Well, how do you identify? You identify, you won a Lezzy Award, do you identify as a lesbian?
Sure. I probably, if someone asked me flat out, how do you identify, I'd probably say dyke instead of lesbian, just because I kind of like that word better, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not opposed to it. I'll call myself dyke or gay or lesbian or queer.
Because it's interesting, you know, the more rich and powerful you are, there is a sort of like a class consciousness with women and same sex or queer sexuality. Like Ellen identifies as gay.
Mm-hmm.
And if you like had qualified for unemployment in the last year, you're more likely to identify as dyke.
Mm. Oh, and I have qualified for unemployment in the last year, actually.
Yeah, there you go.
So what is going on there, like with the gay,
is it
lesbian?
A class issue?
I don't know. I'm wondering, like, if you have a lot of money, you identify like Susie Orman. She's a gay woman.
Mm-hmm.
But she doesn't identify as a butch.
Butch top, no.
No.
Although she is a butch top, in my opinion.
But I don't know.
I mean,
you think Susie Orman's a top?
Oh, of course. She'll balance your checkbook and serve it up.
I bet she's all about double penetration. She needs to loosen up that sphincter after all talking about money all the time. Of course. No. She's probably a bottom.
So, Sinclair, how did you come to becoming a blogger and certainly now an award-winning blogger about sex and sexuality? How did this journey start for you?
Well, I've been doing writing projects online since I was about 16, so it was about 15 years ago I started writing personal journals online, and, you know, 16 years ago there was no blog, it was just a journal. And it was really transformative. It was really a way for me to talk to people about the things that I was going through. Mostly what I was writing about then was coming out and becoming gay and queer, whatever, and how to navigate that world. So it really made so many connections for me to reach out and talk to other people who are going through these same things. Some of those friends I still know and still keep in touch with.
Do you see your blog as a way of communicating to friends more than it is to a general audience? Or who is the audience that you define for your blog?
It's more of a general audience now. It's not so much for my friends and family to keep up with my life as it is the larger queer and feminist and sex communities who are exploring gender and sexuality and relationships and kink in similar ways that I am.
And do you feel like that change has happened slowly over the years, or was there like an event in your life that said, I'm going to use this as more of a broader speaking platform than speaking to my personal friends initially, which was your blog?
Initially it was even more, way more anonymous than either of those things.
Oh,
it was
okay.
Never about communicating to my friends as much as it was about having an outlet for thoughts and ideas and things that I couldn't even tell anybody else about. When I started Sugar Butch specifically about 4 years ago, I was in a lesbian bed desk relationship that was killing me because I was my sex drive is through the roof, and so I was just like, I can't. So I decided I was either going to go to the gym or I was going to write a sex story anytime that I felt like having sex. So of course I went to the gym like 3 times a day and had to do something with all this sexual energy. So I started writing smut and I started posting it on a blog, and it was kind of the kind of sex that I wanted to be having but wasn't, and the blog ended up getting some readers, and I started connecting with the sex bloggers in New York City and with other people who wrote about sex online. And I ended up kind of writing myself to a new identity a little bit, to a new perspective, and wrote myself out of that relationship.
I write you out of my relationship.
I really did. I was very game for having it work out, but it just didn't work out, and and that was not going to change. I didn't.
Well, was it because of the feedback that you were getting about writing about your sex and sexuality and your relationship on your blog that it sort of forced the question, do I want to be with this other person?
I think I kind of knew when I started writing that it was going downhill. I was really hoping that we would work it out, but as you know, as it went on and on, it became more clear that I was really committed to communication and opening things up and exploring all sorts of new kinky sexual stuff, and my ex, my partner at the time, was just not interested in those things. So I knew I needed to move on.
Was she aware of your writing?
No. No. So, and nobody was in the beginning, and that has definitely bit me in the ass a couple times, I gotta say. Can I say ass on your podcast?
Yeah.
Well, how did it bite you in the ass?
Be as explicit as you want to be.
You know, a year later, the girls that I'd written about, met more than one, had came back to me and sent me an email and said, oh, so that's what you named me, huh?
Oh.
And had found what I had written about them.
So they were able to piece it together. Oh, because your picture's on there, so they were able to piece it together.
Yes, but my picture didn't used to be on there. It used to be a lot more anonymous of a website, actually.
So what was that process like? Because I guess you're kind of coming out as a blogger, as a real person.
Yeah, that process was like that, definitely. I had I started doing more events in person. I started connecting with the internet, the sex blogger community in New York City, and so people started knowing me more and more. And I started getting more and more readers, and it started being kind of 1 or 2 or 3 degrees of separation from people who knew me as my given name and as Sinclair. So it started being pretty obvious that.
Now, Sinclair is your blogging pen name, or is that the name you use, like, on the streets? And
no, that's my pen name.
And do you, for the purposes, of this podcast, you identify as Sinclair Sexsmith, but are you out as your Christian name or your Czech writing name?
Your government name.
Your government name.
Our friend likes to say.
Not really. I mean, people who know me know that I do this work now. Mm-hmm. I'm out in that direction, but
sure.
I don't really want people to find Sinclair when they search for me.
Okay.
So in a way, you want to keep that separation between your job. So you don't see your blog as necessarily as a career that will be permanently tied to your legal name.
I have some questions about whether or not that's a good idea.
And what is that question? Because I mean, for the purposes of this podcast and the panel that, mm-hmm. unfortunately, this is actually airing after our panel, but that is a question about, like, you know, should bloggers come out and should bloggers demand or ask celebrities mm-hmm. to come out?
Or what is our struggle with this? So, like, personally for you, what are you going through as far as this goes? What are your concerns about coming out?
Well, for a little while I was concerned. I mean, in the past it's been because I really wanted to write really personal shit about my relationship. And I didn't necessarily want my the people immediately in my life to read that and to know about it. I don't necessarily want, you know, my mother to be able to read about what I did in bed last night, which I do post fairly often. Just like, this is my girlfriend and I had this kind of sex yesterday, and it went on for hours and hours and. Et cetera, and I don't need. There are a lot of people in my life that don't need to know that level of detail about what I do.
Do you feel that there's a cost to being anonymous or using a pen name or a ben? I mean, what are the costs or benefits?
Not sure. Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, it's hard to cross promote my artistic careers. I'm still kind of in debate about this. And as Sinclair has evolved and changed and become more and more of what I do with my life, basically, because it is is most of my focus these days. I've been having more divide, you know, more dual identity stuff, and I don't like to keep that up. So.
Does it kind of drive you crazy? Because it's a little bipolarish in some respects.
It's
like not being out to your parents, and they keep asking you, so tell me about your boyfriend or your girlfriend, and you're like,
Well, maybe, and who knows? You know, I always say it's like, if you think your parents can't handle reading a story about you having sex, maybe they need to read it. You know.
Yeah. Well, maybe not.
Well, there are actually. When I started writing erotica, I published it under my given name, under my government name, and so I know that my mom knows that I write erotica, and I know that I don't know if she's read it. I don't think so, but I don't think she would like it very much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you know what? Parents can be very nosy, though, Sinclair. They're like,
oh yes.
You know, so she probably knows that you don't know or knows, you know, it's like, and she's like stalking you.
Well, what is your erotic? Is it lesbian, erotic,
oh, yes.
Or queer? Okay.
Yep.
All right.
Well, it's graphic. You know.
Strap on cocks, lots of blowjobs, you know, the whole works.
Well, because I've read, though, too, is like a lot of lesbians really enjoy, like, male erotica. I've heard that they like to.
Like slash fiction.
Like slash fiction, that kind of stuff. Or at least I know a lot of hetero women love to read stories about, you know, Harry Potter having sex with Malfoy.
Right. Yeah, so, that stuff is really popular. I don't really know why myself, but I understand that that's the truth.
We'd like to take a moment to remind the listeners that today's show is brought to you by generous support of fantastic people like you. We couldn't do our show without your support. Thank you. And this podcast is also brought to you in part by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks. With more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and erotica, featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers.
For listeners of Feast of Fun, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. One audiobook to consider is The Best American Erotica. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/feastoffun. That's to audiblepodcast.com/feastoffun.
And we really do recommend The Best American Erotica. It's a collection of writing from a broad range of voices and upcoming new writers and erotica veterans like Susie Bright, Kim Wright, Stefan Rudnicki, Carrington McDuffie, and lots of really interesting broad range of voices and experiences talking about crossing the so-called Lolita gap between youth and middle age.
I guess you got to be careful where you listen to that at. Could you imagine like riding it in your, listening to it while you're in your car?
This is just one book that you get, okay? So you, for free, you're going to get a collection On the Eighth Day by Vanessa Bagot, Dangerous Games with Competent People by Kim Wright, and Entry Point by Shanna Germain.
Sounds sexy.
Sluts by Dennis Cooper. So, you know, it's a pretty good broad range. And of course, Susie Bright spearheads all this stuff. And she also has a series of in-depth interviews. One of them is with Tristan Taormino called In Bed with Susie Bright. So check out audible.com/feastoffun and you'll get yourself a free audiobook. It's that easy. Here's an explosive quote from Stephen Merritt of the Magnetic Fields and a party promoter of Runt.
Runt is no longer.
Short men. I know, but I love pointing that out. For short men and their admirers. So this is a quote here. And Stephen Merritt loves to put his foot in his mouth and usually around South by Southwest. So here goes. This is my advice to budding young songwriters. Don't come out. I think the outing movement and the general propaganda that everyone ought to come out, I think that damaged a lot of people, actually. I think it's clear from the careers of gay performers that the way to be successful is to come out later, not beforehand.
Huh.
And this is an interesting situation when it comes to blogging, because I've observed that there are some anonymous or pen name bloggers that spend a lot of time earlier in their careers outing celebrities. Two of them is D-Listed and Perez Hilton, who both as anonymous bloggers were like, they should be out of the closet, but not me. What's your thought on all that?
I have touched on that on occasion, but not in any regular way. My work is very personal. It's very much about, the tagline on Sugar Butch Chronicles is the sex, gender, and relationship adventures of a kinky queer butch top. So it's a lot about my own sexuality, my own gender identity, and the ways that that shifts or doesn't shift, and a lot about my relationships, who I'm dating, and how that is going. I remember when Cynthia Nixon kind of came out and was outed, maybe, as dating, what's her name, Christine Marioni, they're kind of butch femme. So I wrote about that, going, whoa, Cynthia Nixon's dating a butch. How awesome is that? But I don't keep up with celebrity news, and I don't really keep up with, especially don't keep up with news in general on the blog. It's not a news blog. There are tons and tons of places you can go to get news.
So it's more like stories about erotica. Now, earlier in the show, you mentioned that you were reached out to some of the other gay bloggers in New York, or queer bloggers or sex-positive bloggers. And I was reading on your site, too, that you do some work with the Lesbian Sex Mafia.
That's right.
So what do you do with them? You hold events?
Well, I'm not too heavily involved, but I go to their events. They have a monthly workshop, and you can become a card-carrying member.
That's a great name.
Have a Lesbian Sex Mafia card in your wallet, you can become a card-carrying member.
Well, what do you guys do there?
They throw sex parties, and they also do workshops around sexuality and gender and kink and things like that. So last month I did a workshop there called How to Spice Up Your Role Play. It was about gendering power, so using gender in role play and in your power play in bed. And this month Melina is going to be there, who I'm really excited about. She's on March 19th, I think. And
I guess you guys give a new whole meaning to the phrase sleeping with the fishes.
What?
Well, you got to use the mafia term.
Oh, the mafia term. Yeah, yeah. There you go.
Sleep. You'll be sleeping with the fishes in a good way, not a bad way.
So gender role play. So you pretend like you're a plumber and this young woman has just answered her door and you have to fix like her plumbing and then you end up in bed with her?
Sure, that's one way. Sure, yeah. One of the things that I wanted to talk about in that workshop specifically was about the ways that playing with gender in the bedroom can actually reflect and enhance your own gender identity outside of the bedroom. So one of the ways that I kind of became stronger as a butch was that I had partners who said, I want you to strap on and I want you to fuck me and I want to call you, you know, he, and I want to pretend you're my professor, so I'm going to call you Mr. Sexsmith or whatever, and it really used a lot of gender identity in the play to play with the ways that I was growing as a butch.
Right on. What is your pronoun that you prefer? Is he or she?
She and her at this point. I could go either way, but gender neutral pronouns are so awkward. I don't tend to go by those, but. Mm-hmm. But I do go by Mr. Sexsmith, so that confuses people a little bit.
So you're not like with the camp oh God, I'm blanking
on the pirates.
The pirates or the Z's, the R's or
no, I think I'm too much of a poet for that a little bit. I find the language so awkward it's hard for me.
But
I
find,
try.
Yeah.
I know friends who prefer to go by they or by Z in here, and I try. I do pretty well when I'm talking about other people, but I can't shake that it sounds awkward.
I feel like I sound like the New York Times, like we there are, you know. So you know, I mean, you know, I think definitely playing with the gender, and you know, I think for gay men when they hear playing with gender, they immediately think of forced feminization. And for gay men, it's a turn on. Oh dear, what was that?
Sorry, that was my stove. I apologize.
Okay. For gay men, I think sometimes it's really important to think maybe you might want to butch it up even more in the bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to, you know, gender playing doesn't always have to be being something opposite what you think you are. It might be exaggerating what you are.
Absolutely.
And do you feel like in your blog, do you tend to play up certain aspects of your sexuality or your personality in order to explore them?
Yes, definitely. I mean, the Sinclair as a kind of persona of mine is a little bit bigger and bolder than I am in reality. But but there's nothing in there that is untrue or false. It's just turned up. Everything is, you know, ours go to 11 all the way, kind of.
It's more exuberant
instead of just kind of at my usual depth, and it's really fun that way. And I've gotten to new places, and I've given myself permission to explore things that I wouldn't have maybe otherwise explored. You know, that's the benefit of taking on roles, especially in the bedroom, right? If you decide you're going to role play with a teacher student scenario, you can be, you know, this teacher who's supposed to be really mean and just will never give anyone an A because they're the hard ass of the whole college, right? And so the person has to like. The person you're playing with really has to beg you to, you know, give in and give them an A and we'll just do anything for you. And you get to play with, like, being harder or harsher than you usually are in your real life. And you don't have to feel guilty about the play because you can put it on and then you can take it off again. And you can leave it behind. And it doesn't have to be an indication of who you are at some deep level.
So it's about losing guilt.
Oh, I love that conversation about losing guilt. Yes. So much sexuality and gender and everything is so much guilt in it in this culture, and I think that is extremely important to examine and let go of.
Guilt is exhausting.
It'll wear you down.
I mean, I observe that in people. It's like if they're usually feeling guilty, they look tired.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? It's like nothing energizes you more with that devil may care attitude.
Well, I often find along with sex too, in these sex games that people play with it, whether it's bondage or these kind of things where you're the top and the bottom, it kind of mimics our own physical orgasm. Because what is an orgasm but a buildup of like tension and then release and then tension and release? And so if you're tying people up and then you're having sex and then releasing them, it kind of like the whole act kind of mimics you know, our brain and what an orgasm is.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
Thank you.
Now, this is your, Sinclair, this is your claim to fame. One of your claims to fame is that you put together this very long list of famous butches.
Yes.
And it got a lot of, can you kind of talk a little bit about it? It got some people like mad at you.
Because we blogged on it on Feast of Fun, even before we knew who you were, we saw the list and we're like, hey, this is cool.
Oh, hang on. It's called Top Hop Butches, and it's tophopbutches.com. And it's 100 of the sexiest butches, genderqueers, trans guys, and various other kind of masculine identified women. The problem was, see, there aren't that many masculine identified women in the media. But of course, now that Rachel Maddow's around, kind of all these articles of, you know, the butch is back, you know.
She's the queen bee.
But we went anywhere. I mean, we've been here the whole time. But I'm glad there's, you know, more visibility. And so I you know, spent a lot of time, a lot of my visibility around butchness. I get a lot of people asking me, like, where are all the butches? Where are all the butches? And I was sick of the just lack of exposure, lack of visibility of so many. And there are so many working and doing, you know, songwriters and actors and all sorts of writers, musicians, people from all sorts of artistic areas making a difference. So I put this list together. I had a panel who helped me pick the list, and we decided we would include transgendered men on the list. And we had about a dozen, maybe, that we included. And when the list came out, there were a lot of people who said that is completely not okay to have trans men included on this list, because trans men are men and this list is butches who are women. And it's insulting to trans men to lump them with women because you're not, you know, validating their gender identity. And I actually really do understand that argument, and I think that but I think that it's a little more complicated than that.
Well, did the people that were on the list that identified as trans, did they voice concern? Were they like, please take me off this list? I don't identify as butch. Could you, did they ask to be taken off? Or did any of them ask to be included?
I did not hear from a single, that is actually what my solution was for this problem, was that I contacted everyone on, all the trans men on the list, and if they contacted me or if I heard from them that it was okay for them to stay on the list, then I left them on the list. And if I didn't hear from them, I took them off the list.
Mm.
And so we ended up with six or so, I think, of the trans men who I talked to stayed on the list. Many of them said, absolutely, I totally identify as butch. That's a really important part of my identity. I have a lot of, you know, long history of relation to that word. It's important to me. I'm honored.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't hear from anyone actually on the list who said, absolutely not, don't put me on there.
Do you think maybe that outing is more like oriented to gay men and like creating a list of tophotbutches.com would be more oriented to women who are attracted to their same gender, but also attracted to what is seen as a traditional masculine image up for themselves?
Yeah, I do think that butch is probably more stronger used in lesbian communities these days.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's always the case, but you know, I think in gay male communities it would be more said macho or something like that, something, mm-hmm. you know, extra masculine.
But it's interesting because like if a gay guy says like, I'm butch or I'm a macho, every single gay man that hears that statement is going to say, oh, no, she's not.
Oh, really?
You know, not with your legs up in the air. And so that, like, you know, that gay sexuality is inherently seen as feminine, whereas for a woman to identify as a butch it's not questioned or laughed at.
Maybe masculinity has to be taken much more seriously in this ridiculous culture. I write a column on masculinity called Radical Masculinity for CarnalNation.com, and I think there's a lot of ways that masculinity is built in that plays into just there.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, certainly something certainly fascinating to talk about, you know. I like that you have, Rachel Maddow. You have a personal trainer from New York City, Skylar Cooper.
Mm-hmm. I think she's in L.A. now, and she's an actress also.
And then Las Buchalitas de Panochitlan.
You did much better with that than I would have. I don't speak Spanish at all.
Buchalis de Panochitlan.
It's a little hard. Yeah, they're a performance group.
They look fantastic.
They're so hot, aren't they? Yeah.
So it's like three Mexican, they look like Mexican gangbangers, but with suit and neckties.
Totally.
And then Ivan E. Coyote.
Ivan, yeah. Ivan's a writer, a wonderful writer from the Yukon Territory in Canada, which is really close to Alaska, and I have a lot of identification with her work for that reason.
And then, of course, Amy Ray of the Indigo Girls and Janelle McCarville.
Did Murray Hill make the list?
Murray Hill is not on the list.
Time to put Murray Hill.
I know, I should. Everybody's been asking, is there going to be another one? I don't know. I don't know if I can do another list, guys.
Why? Because it was too much controversy, or was it a trouble getting it all together?
Both. The controversy and it just took so much work to get that all done.
Sinclair, how do you deal with controversy? Because in my perspective, I say, bring it on. Thank you for taking time out of your busy day to write something about me, even if it's negative, even if it's an attempt to silence my voice. I still welcome it because at least it's some sort of interaction. The worst thing that you can do for me as a content creator on the internet is to ignore me. Silence equals death.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so,
I should adopt that a bit more. I tend to do the opposite, probably, which is cry.
Aww.
How do you deal with it?
No, I'm exaggerating a little bit. But
it does hurt your feelings,
though.
I mean, how do you deal with it? Like, do you call your therapist, or do you, like,
sometimes.
How does your blog interact with, how does your online voice interact with the haters?
I tend to not engage, frankly. I have a hard time. This is an ongoing question for me. I mean, and as my work gets more and more personal, and as I explore, you know, sexualities that are more and more taboo, mm-hmm. it's really complicated, and I get some hate mail that's very offensive sometimes. I'm learning to kind of have my own, to strengthen my own sovereignty, that kind of feeling that I'm in charge of my own kingdom, mm-hmm. that idea. I try to realize that it's really about them and it's not about me, that I'm happy in my life, that I know what I'm doing, and I know I'm doing it for good, feminist, honest, you know, open reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I do the best I can. That's a hard one for me. I don't know if I have the answers. I would ask other people for their answers before I'd listen to mine. Probably.
Well, do you usually just try and ignore it? Like if somebody posts a comment on your website, do you just ignore it, or is it...
Some people delete it.
Yeah, I might delete it. I might leave it there and watch the other readers pounce on it.
Mm-hmm.
I would often share it with some confidants that I trust, you know, my girlfriend, my closest friends, and usually work through it offline. I don't usually call people out. I don't want to give them any more attention than they already want to get.
Because it is sort of like a attention. They see you as something powerful or large that needs to be stricken down.
Yes, right.
And otherwise, if they saw you as a nobody, they wouldn't bother. But because they see you bigger, mm-hmm. and so in a way, it's a compliment.
Yeah, I can see that perspective.
Now,
usually the day after.
Is it usually like the hate mail or the comments? Is it usually people that disagree with what you're saying, or is it usually just from like a misogynistic, bigoted person?
It might be the opposite of the misogynistic. People telling me that I'm being misogynistic.
Oh.
And I, you know, if I'm a top and I'm masculine, then I must be hating women. And I need to, you know, deal with my issues and things like that. That's the stuff that killed, that gets me anyway. I mean, if somebody was on there saying, like, you know, oh, I don't know, oh, you're a bad writer and, you know, you're an ugly butch who just wants to be a man or something, I'd be like, whatever,
mm-hmm.
You're an idiot. That doesn't...
But when they're like, you're not helping womanhood, that kind of stuff.
Me.
Okay.
Because we interviewed, is this maybe a generational thing? We interviewed the singer-songwriter Farron a couple years ago on this program.
Oh, yeah?
And Farron said, who identifies as a butch lesbian.
Well, yeah, she's fantastic. I know her.
But said that it, you know, had she been younger today, that she probably would have identified as a trans guy. And mm-hmm. that really, like, the butch... femme, butch, lesbian, trans guy debate here happening is really a generational debate.
It could be. I mean, I know older trans men also who used to be butch and have transitioned, or mm-hmm. and I know younger butches who, you know, have a different sense of gender. They don't. I don't think that they think that the only option is to transition right now. Mm-hmm.
But I think younger people. Do you think that younger people, especially that are more ready to embrace the internet and new technologies, that they have a mindset that anything is possible and I can be anything I want to be, and usually wind up transitioning more often than not.
I mean, I hope that they're saying anything is possible, and I can be whatever I want to be. I think that the internet generation is vastly helpful for that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that always means, therefore, I'm more likely to transition, or therefore, I will transition. I hope that that also means that we're making a bigger space between what it is to be a man and what it is to be a woman. So I can be a woman and look like I look, and I can be a woman and be very cock-identified and want to really only have sex when I'm wearing a cock. That kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. So
that doesn't mean that I'm not a woman.
Have you noticed, I think it's kind of a new trend, is a lot of trans people, you know, it's not just enough to be trans anymore, but you also have to have a relationship, and then maybe that person also has another relationship, that polyamory is kind of really big with younger people. Have you noticed any of that?
I have noticed that, and...
Like, I was introduced to somebody, and they're like, oh, and her other boyfriend sitting over there, or her other girlfriend sitting over there.
You don't have street cred if you're not gender inclusive, gender fluid, and polyamorous.
Right.
Otherwise, I have nothing to speak, you know, get out of my face.
Wow.
It's like...
Yeah, that's possible. You know, have you read Tristan Tiarmino's recent book? She wrote a book called Open.
Yes.
Oh, she was here, yeah. She we call it the polyamory Nazi.
Nazi?
Well, you know what it is. She's very, very passionate about it. And she's, you know, she sat here in our home studio when we talked to her. And it was just like, she was like, you will have an open relationship and your relationship isn't enough. But we're exaggerating, of course. But listen, I loved that book and I gave it to a friend who was really struggling with relationships. And I said, this is really
it's
a book that you need to read.
It's a wonderful resource, and we really don't have very many books on this subject out there that are fantastic. The Ethical Slut is pretty much the only other one, right?
Right.
But she says, you know, she thinks that that's going to be the new issue. Post-feminist, post-gay, post-trans, it's going to be poly.
Right.
I believe it. You know, Big Love.
Uh-huh.
You know, certainly watching Big Love on HBO, it sort of gives us an insight into... You know, what is old is new again, and because especially like issues of sexism and double standards in polyamorous relationships and inequality, which is what Tristan likes to really talk about, that the myth of the equal relationship really manifests itself in that series, and it's a wonderful thing. Now, Sinclair, how's social media impacted your blogging audience? One complaint that we've gotten from a lot of bloggers is that they feel like Twitter and Facebook means that people don't visit your site as often, that they use Twitter and Facebook as a proxy to see, is there anything good happening on Sugar Butch Chronicles? I don't know. I didn't see anything on the Facebook or Twitter, so I'm not going to visit the site. That it sort of discourages readership of your blog.
Oh, gosh, I hope that's not true. I think that, I immediately notice spikes in traffic anytime I post that, you know, I have like an auto update from RSS feed to Twitter. So anytime I post something on the blog, it'll say, oh, there's a new post on Twitter. And absolutely, I notice spikes in traffic when I do that. And I think that I don't utilize Facebook as much as I should, but my biggest problem with social media, I think, is that I just don't have time to blog and Twitter and Facebook and all these other things, you know, keeping up with all of the different angles. What, you know, and how about email? And what about, you know, writing things for money? And what about, oh, yeah, spending time actually fucking my girlfriend? I'm very busy. It takes a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
So do you feel like one answer to that question is the fact that it's like you consume that you gonna give your audience choices in how they're gonna consume your content. And so one thing that's always said in rich media is that, you know, one thing that we always get criticized for is we don't video simulcast the audio interviews that we do. And of course, you know, sometimes we do this on the phone. So it's like, you know, how exciting it is to watch somebody have a phone call. But I guess the gist of the message is you want to give your audience the ability to consume your content through their choices.
Either as many options as you can. Yeah. Sure.
But the downside of that is that it discourages them from actually visiting your site and actually having a conversation with you. That Twitter and Facebook become a proxy for a more in-depth conversation that you would have had through a blog.
I think sometimes that is true, yeah. I also think that it's opened up new ways of communicating which are really different. And I get, you know, I often call Twitter the hive mind. Mm. And so I pose questions to the hive mind in various ways. Like, I remember I said recently, a couple months ago now, I said, finish this sentence, masculinity is blank. And I got, I don't know, 100 people responding saying that. And I don't think I would have had that much if I had tried to make a post and have people comment with that phrase, you know?
Yeah, I really like, I always tell people that Twitter is the 8-ball.
Yeah.
Magic 8-ball, you know? So you can, and, you know, sometimes you get a really good answer and sometimes you get a very superficial answer.
It's crowdsourcing.
Yeah, totally. Answer hazy, try again later.
So how do you keep your site being blocked? This is one question that came up in the forum. Your site being blocked from the kind of content, especially for you, that you write such explicit, explosive sexual content.
Yeah, I mean, I think the question posed to the panel was about is about lesbian and gay content, in particular queer content.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely find that anywhere any lesbian and gay content is banned, the sex content will be banned way before that. But I also find you can usually get through banning ban problems if you're using an RSS reader. And for that reason, I tend to host my images on a third party so that people reading an RSS can still read it. And for a while, up until last year, fall of last year, I had a 9-to-5 day job, and they started ratcheting up their internet policies as I was leaving, and eventually my own site got blocked because I couldn't work on it from work anymore.
Aww.
And
when the man pays for our
I love hearing about a blogger that does it on the company time.
It was fully funded for almost 3 years by my day job, absolutely. As it got more and more tight, I ended up having to kind of work around my own limitations to find out. Oh, and then I'd be like, oh, this is what other people deal with when they're trying to comment or trying to get to my site. So it was a good exercise, and I started doing things a little bit differently. But generally, my answer to that has been RSS readership.
So push that.
Push it, using Flickr.
I'm not going to censor, and you can't. I can't write a story without having a whole lot of sex on it. And I can write a story, but I don't want to write those stories. And the stories that I'm posting are highly sexual and very loaded and with lots of dirty words, and that's part of the point.
Yeah, I find it also just like it, instead if you're going to say like something like cock or cunt or dick, it's usually like substituting a vowel in there with an asterisk goes a long way.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, it's like, or just, you know, I always say it's like, do you, you know, this is what my older sister who teaches in a very, you know,
a rough school,
economically challenged high school in Austin, Texas. She says, do you really, when people say words like fuck and shit and piss and, you know, they're not effectively communicating what their feelings and what their thoughts are.
Yeah, and that's what my mom would say also.
And cussing is feels good, but it doesn't get others to understand where we're coming from. And
definitely.
And sometimes we use explicit words even to describe our sexuality, which is sometimes, I always say, it's like, you know, it's a lot more fun to say I'm tiptoeing through the tulips than I'm saying I'm, you know, sucking on somebody's
dick.
But
for her, she writes about things. She's like, I want you to shit on me while you fuck me and piss on me. So what is, you know what I mean? What are you going to do there?
Well, what I'm saying is for bloggers, it might be something to consider is to write in the voice where people who can't access the type of content, where the sites gets blocked, to write sometimes between the lines, because it can be fun. It can be something that it can open up creativity. And, you know, certainly, like, it's so exciting to read, you know, sexually explicit, those Pulp Fiction novels from the 1950s where everything was between the lines, you know? Women with no hope of tomorrow, you know? And basically, it was all erotica.
It can make you very creative to find, you know, any restrictions on the writing, I think, can make you really creative.
Again, it's that tension and release.
Sinclair, in the what's the future hold for you? Are you going to be writing about, do you see yourself writing about sex and your sex life throughout your life? Or do you think that there's going to be a day where it'll change again for you?
Well, the specific content that I usually engage with is sex and gender and relationships. But the larger kind of scope of my work is all about healing and about communication. And I think that will remain my aim for a really long time. That's endless, you know? Having people be able to talk to each other about what they want and what they want to do and who they want to be and how they express themselves and how I express myself and, you know, all of those things in relation to my particular experiences. And then, sex and gender and relationships, those are places that we get really harmed really easily. They're very vulnerable and very personal, and I'm really interested in people healing themselves from those wounds and working through the ways that all of those interactions can be painful, because the flip side, of course, because they're so painful, the flip side is that they can be so incredibly liberating and transformative
and erotic
and so much fun. Not just, you know, not just heady, but like, fuck yeah, that was awesome.
Well, Sinclair, thank you so much for talking to us.
My pleasure. Thank you for calling. I'm really looking forward to South by Southwest.
Well, this already airs
after. I had such a fun time at South by Southwest with you. It was amazing. Really got to do it again.
That party last night was off the hook.
Hey, you promised you wouldn't say anything. Don't tell.
I'm not going to tell anybody. You better throw out that digital camera. I don't want to see those pictures anywhere on the internet.
Maybe.
And Sinclair, they can follow you at sugarbutchchronicles.com and Twitter.com/Mr. Sexsmith, right?
Yes, it's sugarbutch.net.
Oh, sugarbutch.net. And then also hottopbutches.com, too, if you want to find out who is competing with Rachel Maddow for the top prize. will Rachel Maddow ever be knocked off the top of the pile?
She might. There's always a Nomi Malone coming behind the stairs behind you.
That's true.
Thank you, Sinclair.
There's some young hunks out there, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
Sinclair Sexsmith lives in New York City. You can read her blog at the Sugar Butch Chronicles at sugarbutch.net. Because
lots of erotic stories.
What did you say? She catches...
Oh, she got the .net. Cause
what?
It's a bad joke. You already did the swimming with the fishes joke.
Well, listen, if you bring it up, the mafia, you're going to bring up sleeping with the fishes.
Concrete stilettos. Swimming with the fishes and concrete stilettos.
You watch anybody that called Velvet Mafia or Lesbian Sex Mafia, they have the word mafia at the end. You watch out.
Because they mean it.
They mean And you can also follow Sinclair on Twitter at MrSexsmith.com. We're going to play you a little bit of Girl on the Road.
Oh, by Farron.
By Farron, a classic butch. Mm-hmm. Who is not on actually hottopbutches.com.
I wonder how she got left off.
How dare you? We should start a protest.
There's always people you forget. How did you not mention this person? How did you forget this person?
Yeah. Well, we didn't forget you, Farron. And don't forget us.
No.
Remember, you can subscribe to the podcast on the iTunes Music Store. If you don't do so already, you're missing a lot. Join in on the conversation. Search Feast of Fun on iTunes and hit subscribe. It's that easy.
You can also comment on this show at feastoffun.com.
That's all they gotta do?
That's all you gotta do. Just go to the website, find us, comment, let us know what you think about butch, dyke, femme stuff.
What is your journey? Actually, if you actually have a fabulous blog that you want to share with us, you can go to feastoffun.com/fresh and post your blog entries or anything really that matter. How dare you not be fabulous? Share the best stuff that you've done or you found on the internet. Join in on all the fun at Feast of Fun. I am Fausto Furnos.
I'm Mark Killian.
Bye, everyone. Stringing lights and truck stops, in darkness and in lights. And a man they all call Tiger Boy, he just had to show me why. He just had to give me something I'd forever understand. There's a girl on every road. Sing with me. Rain upon the water makes footprints sunk in sand. Anger upon angry hurt. Take me by the hand. Take me by the heartstrings. Pull me deep inside. Say I'm one with your forgiveness and separate from my pride. Don't know what it's like for you, but here's what it's like for me. I want it to turn beautiful and serve eternity and never follow money or love with greasy hands or move the earth and waters just to make it fit my plans. My eyes would be the harbor, my words the perfect place for a girl. I met you in the summer, I left you in the fall. In between we did some living, I like to think that's all. Now I see words can be like weapons, no matter that they're small. I used three tiny words on you and then beat it down the hall. Does this road go on forever? Does this terror know no end for a girl? On hell road, sing it. Rain upon the water makes footprints sunk in sand. Anger upon angry hurt. Take me by the hand. Take me by the heartstrings. Pull me deep inside. Say I'm one with your forgiveness and separate from my pride.
Does the part I did my best to follow the calling of my soul. It's like that first guitar play. At the center is a hole. At the center is a longing that I cannot understand. There's a girl on every road. If music be a boulder, let me carry it a long while. Let it turn into a feather. Let it brush against my smile. Let the life be somewhat settled with the life the song has made. Let there be nothing I'm longing for in some plan I may have made, in some story quickly written during a long forgotten time. As a girl on a road, rain upon the water makes footprints sunk in sand. Anger upon angry hurt, take me by the hand. Take me by the heartstrings, pull me deep inside. Say I'm one with your forgiveness, separate from my pride.